Good morning, everybody. I think the first thing I have to do is read this next statement that says I have no financial relationships with any commercial interests influencing this presentation. And my name is Bill Walsh. I'm the executive director of the Healthy Building Network in Washington. We're based in Washington, D.C., but we operate nationally. And I'm not a MPH or a doctor of any kind. I'm trained as a lawyer. And I'm here to talk to you today about how we in the green building movement act on the growing information about chemical hazards in our environment, in an environment where the regulatory structures are not really adequate to the task at this point. The first thing I wanted to talk about is the impact of building materials, the impact that building materials have in terms of the of chemicals in our environment. If you look at the use of arsenic, for example, until it was phased out of pressure-treated wood, it was the number one use of arsenic in the United States was in building products. Building products, if you look at something like the PVC vinyl life cycle, is likely the number one source of dioxin into our environment. Phthalate chemical softeners that are used to soften vinyl building materials, the number one use is in things like in vinyl products like flooring and wall covering and membrane roofing. Half of the world's formaldehyde goes into building products. And we labor under a regulatory structure that that really does not protect the public from these chemical hazards in their products. Most audiences to whom I speak in the building industry assume that if a chemical is being used in a building product, it's been tested. But in fact, as you all probably, I see a lot of nodding heads, you probably know that the 1976 law that governs our chemical regulations actually handcuffs the EPA instead of having the authority to investigate chemicals before they're brought to market. Most chemicals in commerce were grandfathered in as considered safe. Only 200 have been required to have health testing undertaken, and only 5 chemicals have ever really been banned under federal law. And the story behind each of these is kind of an interesting story in itself. But we're operating in this environment where it is very difficult to get adequate chemical hazard regulation in our building products. But yet we're being told by authorities all over the world that building products are a significant source of chemicals in our bodies and in our children's bodies. The World Health Organization identified building materials as a major source of endocrine disrupting chemicals. And there have been a number of studies by both NGOs and governmental agencies that have identified industrial chemicals in our bodies in the cord blood of newborn children. We've looked at those chemical lists, and many, if not most, of them are used in our building products. On the National Report on Human Exposures to Environmental Chemicals, they have consistently found and tracked many chemicals that are used in our building products into our bodies. And this is the background of information that we're operating with in the building industry as we try to find ways of reducing exposures to these chemicals and the use of these chemicals in our building products. In 2009, EPA created a list of chemicals of concern that tended to be persistent in bioaccumulative chemicals as well as endocrine disrupting chemicals. Triclosan, I don't believe triclosan was originally on that list, but that's another chemical that's undergoing review for its ubiquitous use as an antimicrobial. And when we look at where these chemicals are used in our building products, it's really pretty much everywhere. And so what my group has done is try to look at the building products and identify the chemicals that are in those products and find ways of both communicating this information to the building industry and the manufacturing sector in order to develop strategies for a systematic and long-term transition away from the most toxic substances and toward healthier products and healthier ingredients. I'm going to talk about some of the chemicals and health impacts that we've been prioritizing in a new initiative that we've started that focuses on the affordable housing industry. And our hope is to work with that industry to really bring them to the forefront of best practices in selecting healthy materials and to use the market force of such a large industry to negotiate with manufacturers for innovation and continuous improvement of their products to phase out some of the most problematic chemicals. One group of chemicals I wanted to talk to you about are asthmogens. And when we looked at building products, we found 50 asthmogens that are regularly used in building products. EPA does not have a list of asthmogens. We were relying on the Association of Occupational Environmental Clinics list and also the Collaborative on Health and the Environment, which is a group of scientists that are looking not only at asthma triggers, but also potential asthma inducers among the endocrine disrupting chemicals. And we came up with that list, and what we found was that in the building products industry, many products that are certified as low-emitting VOCs, low VOC products are certified, and then they're marketed even more aggressively, not just as a low VOC product, but as an asthma-friendly product. But yet they contain a lot of chemicals that are associated with asthma, and that's for a couple of reasons. One, that the focus on VOCs limits the coverage of those certification tests and does not account for example, semi-volatiles that can also be asthma triggers and potentially asthma inducers. And the emission thresholds to gain the low VOC certification aren't aligned with asthma thresholds. They're typically aligned with what are considered more serious health impacts, such as carcinogenicity. So we've got a lot of work to do in order to make sure that if people are relying on a label or relying on a claim of an asthma-friendly product, that it truly doesn't have these chemicals in it. One of these asthma triggers, the phthalates, which are also an endocrine-disrupting chemical, is widely used in vinyl products, as I mentioned. And so one of our responses for addressing the phthalates, which we thought was this is a semi-volatile, so it's not covered in the certifications of low-emitting products. So people are relying on an asthma-friendly product that has a known asthma trigger in it, potentially, and it's never being caught by the screens. So what we did was investigated the alternatives, found that there were alternatives, plasticizers available, and began a negotiation with the leading retailers of home building supplies. And in April of this year, Home Depot agreed that they would require all of their sourcing for vinyl flooring to use chemical non-phthalate softeners. And we reviewed this list of alternatives and found that, in fact, they were superior from an environmental health perspective. Shortly after this announcement, Lowe's made a similar announcement, and together that captured more than 90% of the flooring market in the United States. And since that time, since we've done this slide, some of these companies in the other section, regional kind of do-it-yourself hardware stores, have also joined in this pledge. So in the absence of regulation of phthalates for building products, despite the fact that they are prohibited for use in some children's toys and children's products, we were able to address this very large source of exposure to children through a market-based campaign. What we're finding now in our research is that we really have a recycling paradox in that as we do things like get the phthalates out of the virgin vinyl products, they can come back in through the recycled content in these products. And one of the interesting policy mechanisms that we need to address is that there are many, many incentives for using recycled content in your building products, both from state government, from the federal government, and from green rating systems such as the LEED rating system for building products. But rarely are there any countervailing incentives or screens for what the content of that recycled material might contain. So we found, for example, that in recycled vinyl products, we did an extensive analysis of the supply chain and found that there are many chemical hazards being brought back in because of the way the recycled content is batched. It's usually shipped to China. It's all mixed up. And we're finding things like, for example, lead being brought back into the home in the recycled content of vinyl flooring. So that's something that has to be addressed. And we believe it can be addressed. And we released this report in conjunction with leading recycling advocates because we believe it can be addressed if we simply take more care in our recycling supply chain. Another concern, chemical concern, are the flame retardants. And what we have found by looking at the what happens to cushions from our couches and chairs, what will happen to these chairs when they end their useful life, is that the foam gets chopped up, and again, it's being brought back into our homes in the form of recycled carpet padding. And so just as we see California has changed its laws governing flame retardants in furniture, and people will be gradually phasing out the flame retardants from the furniture in their buildings, they're going to be bringing it back in this recycled content. Again, this is a more challenging dilemma because virtually all of the foam will have flame retardants in it. Another very interesting issue that came to light just this summer was that children with lead poisoning in Cincinnati, the source of that lead poisoning was traced to their father working in a glass recycling facility that handled cathode ray tubes, which, as you know, have a lead coating in the base of them. And by researching the supply chain, we found that most of the national companies that handle recycled glass do a good job of segregating the cathode ray tubes from other waste streams of glass, but some don't. And as a result, the lead can get into even into packaging. Our concern was recycled fiberglass bat has plus or minus 50% recycled glass content, and actually we wanted to have more. In Europe, the recycled glass content of fiberglass is up to 80%, and we wanted to make sure that that these production facilities were safe. And in fact, if they were getting their glass from certain glass recyclers in Ohio, Ohio fiberglass manufacturers had the highest lead emissions into the environment of any fiberglass manufacturers in the United States. So what we have been urging the companies who source their fiberglass bat is to make sure that the manufacturers understand their supply chain. If they can tell where their glass is coming from, we can tell them whether that facility has a lead contamination problem. And this is another example of how the supply chain, especially in green building, can actually drive back into deeper into the supply chain to address environmental health problems that affect not only the building occupant, but also the installation workers and the factory workers and people all along the life cycle through careful selection of building products, and that's what we're trying to do. So we have a new project that's been funded by the JPB Foundation that brings together a unique group of organizations, mine along with the Parsons School of Design in New York, the Green Science Policy Institute, which is the leading group on flame retardants in the United States, and a new group called the Health Product Declaration Collaborative. And what we're doing is trying to really provide more tools and more collaboration with the affordable housing industry to do some of these things that I've been giving you examples of, such as negotiate with their suppliers, look into the supply chain, et cetera, and use the healthy home as a driver for a healthy workplace and a healthy construction site. The Health Product Declaration is the first standard format for disclosing the content of building products and its associated health hazards. The biggest problem we have right now in trying to do anything to make our materials healthy or healthier is that we don't know what's in them in the first place. It's often claimed to be proprietary information. This is the first standard form that any manufacturer can fill out. It's voluntary, at least at this time it's voluntary, but we believe there are significant market forces that create incentives for companies to begin to disclose. And by using a standard format, kind of like looking at an MSDS where you know where to look for the information and you know what that box means, we think this is going to make it easier for consumers to understand the contents of the products and to begin to work with the data that they're presented. It's a complex form. It's not as simple as, say, a food product label, but it is it's kind of an enhanced MSDS, if you will, and it's geared toward the product purchaser as opposed to an occupational setting. When we get this information, we can do really interesting comparisons, and my organization has recently been working on a concept that we call the Avoided Hazard Index, where we can look at the ingredients of a product and then make a comparison of those chemical ingredients between two or three or more products. And in this case, we're looking at linoleum versus sheet vinyl. And just so that everyone understands, linoleum is what our grandmothers and grandfathers had in their house. It's made from a cork base, and it was phased out in the 60s in favor of vinyl, a pure plastic product. but it still exists. You can still buy it. And when we compared the two products, you can see in the yellow column there that we were able to quantify how many chemical hazards were avoided in terms of both their production and use and ultimately disposal by choosing the linoleum over the vinyl. And this, of course, is not just exposures to the building occupant, but again, throughout the life cycle of this product, including its manufacturing and its installation. And we have calculated that in a 1,000 square foot apartment, kind of a standard two-bedroom unit, there's 126 pounds of fewer pounds of toxic chemicals in a linoleum product than in a vinyl product. And if you start to add that out, if you look at a 90-unit building, for example, and we did, that's over 5 tons of these of chemical toxins avoided in the flooring, just the flooring of that building. So one product line in one building. And so what we're hoping to do is to work with this concept to really give building owners a sense of what they're accomplishing when they make these choices, and a sense of the collective impact that these choices can have when you spread it across a full project or a full portfolio of buildings. We're also experimenting on ways to get in front of this and make this information more visible at the outset when you're comparing products. And this is a concept that we worked up with the Parsons School of Design to take that same kind of information of the chemical hazards that we know that are associated with each product, and then get it down into kind of an easy visual graphic. So you can see here that the linoleum has fewer red bars that are highlighting some of the chemical hazards. And this is all an attempt. We do work with chemists, and we do work with public health professionals to do the analysis and the math behind all this, but then to really be able to present it in a user-friendly fashion for architects, designers, and building owners who are not themselves chemists or toxicologists. So to sum up, I just wanted to introduce you to what we're doing in this field. I think it's pretty exciting, and I'm hoping here at the APHA meet interested public health professionals who we can learn from and collaborate with on this, because building materials are really a major source of chemical hazards, both in the built environment and throughout their life cycle. By increasing the transparency and understanding what is in the product and where the product comes from, it makes it possible to identify the hazards, and it is making it increasingly possible to compare the hazards and avoid some of them. And as we work with this information, we're now creating new tools that help compare the chemical hazards, help the buyers and the specifiers and the architects make more informed choices, and we hope provide incentives for continuous improvement and innovation in the building products industry. Thank you.